Going Linux, episode 153, Computer America, number 43. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 18th of October, 2011, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your moot co-host, Ben.
No, we don't want you. Oh, moot. Okay,
I thought moot's the word of the day.
Moot. It's a moot point.
Indeed.
It is. Yes, exactly. Well, you're certainly not moot around here, Ben. You make a valid contribution, and we appreciate you being your co-host. So, anyway, it is Tuesday night, and no time for make a comment.
It's moot.
Yes, it is. It is Tuesday night. It is the third Tuesday of the month. That means it's going to be your all Linux show. Everything you ever want to know about Linux and more, tonight is the night. This is the place to be. It's all about Linux, Linux, and more Linux. And here to join us in that effort is Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
Hi, Craig. Hi, Ben. And hey, Ben, if you are mute, you will be moot.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. There you go.
Hey, here's an update, and I'll fill in Larry as we go along. One of the things that we're kind of excited here in the Crossman household is we're getting a boost up in our internet connection speed. It turns out that our local cable company, Charter Cable, offers a 6, 12, and 24 megabits. So we have a DSL, which is 6 megabits, so that's about 5859, so, and an upload speed of about 400. So, but it's better than nothing. It's certainly better than dial-up, and 6 megabits per second, I thought I was really, cooking with gas on DSL. Anyway, Charter has a new service now. Okay. They're offering, are you ready for this, 60 megabits per second. Which is that's faster than what Ben had at the university, which was like 35 or something. 60 megabits per second download speed, 6 megabits upload speed. So the upload speed is faster actually than the download on DSL. And today they actually came out to our home to check things out and look over the system. Everything looks to be a go. However, the internet connection, there was a link that was evidently bad from the street up to the house, and so they had to send another technician who evidently found the problem, and so it's ready to go. Hopefully they'll be out here tomorrow or reschedule it, and then we'll get everything connected. 60 megabits per second. What do you think, Larry?
Wow.
That's fast.
That says it all.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you can download, like a movie one and a half hour movie in like 3 minutes. I mean, it's just
exactly.
We're talking blazingly faster. Yeah.
So is this fiber they're putting in, or
no? It's a cable modem, and I don't know if it's fiber, but it may very well be. I don't know, but the point is there. It's available in where we have our home. The service is available. I know AT&T UVerse, I think, offered 18 megabits per second as their top speed.
Mm-hmm.
60, though, that's unheard of. So I can't fathom what that's going to be like, having that up and running. So
it'll be great.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
It will be. I think so. So anyway, hopefully the next day or so we'll have it connected, and then we'll go from there. So some of the exciting things happening. in our whole household. So tonight, of course, it's all Linux, all about Linux. As I mentioned, Larry picks a topic which is like the underlying topic as we open up our phone lines. Larry's come up with a topic which is six reasons not to use Linux. Okay.
Right.
Not to use it. You're all about listening. You're coming up with six reasons why you shouldn't be using it. That's
right. Exactly.
Very, very bizarre. Yeah.
Well, about, you know, three minutes ago, it was five reasons, but in honor of your discussion about your cable company upping your bandwidth like that, I've added a sixth one.
Okay. Well, good. We're going to have to get into the details. Now, if you want to join in on the conversation or you have any kind of a Linux question, this is the place to be. And, of course, I want to tell you how you can get in touch with us. The easiest way for you to get in touch with us live is to call us. The number is toll-free. It's 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. That number will just get you on and it'll get you through. We also have a special email inbox if you want to send us email. You don't want to go on the air, you're a little radio shy, whatever. It is live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. That's our email address. Send your email to there, and we will get it, and we'll see if we can deal with it. You can also join us in our live interactive add-on chat room from our homepage at computeramerica.com. On the left-hand side there, it says chat with us. It asks for something called a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go into the chat room. Make up a nice username, click the login button beneath it, and your Java-enabled browser, be it on a Windows machine, Macintosh, Linux, Vista, Windows 7, Snow Leopard, Lion, they all work, will move you into the Computer America chat room. And there's also a fourth way for you to communicate with us. We have Skype. If you have a Skype system running on your computer or you have it on your cell phone and you want to call us that way, you can. Our Skype address is Computer America, one word. So you can contact us via Skype as well. So that's how it all goes about. And we're going to, I guess, kind of kick things off with the Linux topic for the month, which is right now it's six. It's been growing. Six reasons not to use Linux. And I guess let's start off with reason, I guess, number one.
Right, and you may be able to tell that some of these, maybe even all of them, are a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
No.
Really, yes. Okay. Yes, indeed.
All right.
Okay, this is probably the most serious one here. The number one reason is you want to use an operating system that comes free with your new computer.
Let's think about that.
Think about it for a second.
Yeah, Addison says Bill Gates is your father.
Yes. Okay. How appropriate.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. So the reason behind that, of course, is that most people think that Windows is free. Or at least when they buy a new computer, it comes free on the computer.
That's
and OS X, same thing. It comes on the new Mac.
That's
right. And you don't have to pay for it, right?
Right.
Well, yeah. Linux is the same price. It's free.
Yeah, there it is.
And you get to put it on there whenever you want to. The big difference, I think, with Linux is that upgrades you never have to pay for. You get free upgrades for life. And just about any Linux distribution that's out there is free to install, free to download, free to use, and you don't need to pay for the upgrades ever, because the upgrades are just as free.
so that begs the question then, why do you find places like Ubuntu and Red Hat and what have you selling Linux? Why would I want to buy Linux if I can get it for free?
Well, first of all, they're selling it because they can.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because the license allows you to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
The license also allows you to give it away. Now, Ubuntu and Red Hat Red Hat mm-hmm. and Novell sell versions of Linux that are designed for the enterprise, for companies to use. And for the most part, they're not really selling the software, they're selling the support and the services that surround it. And even with Red Hat upgrades and so on, you can get CentOS, which is based on Red Hat, and that is free. It's exactly the same code base with all the Red Hat branding taken out of it. They will still provide community support for CentOS with the same support that they provide for Red Hat. In fact, you can purchase Red Hat support and apply it to your CentOS installation if you wish. They sell it because they can. And you'll also find that some stores will carry Linux distributions and provide them for sale. So it isn't always that Linux is free, but if you want to try out Linux, you can always find one that will meet your needs without breaking your bank. That's okay. For sure.
All right. Well, there you go. Reason number one. By the way, Addison has given us four reasons why you don't want to use Linux. The first one, of course, was Bill Gates is your father. Number two is you worship Steve Jobs. Number three is you like getting viruses. And number four is you want to use the same thing they use where you work, and you want to be just as miserable at home. There you go. All right, we're going to take a break.
Well done.
We'll continue on. This is Computer America. It's all Linux. Stay with us. Minutes after the hour here in the Computer America show. It's our third Tuesday night of the month. It's all about Linux. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we are now talking about the topic for the month, which is the six reasons not to use Linux. It just hurts to even say that, but there you go. And, of course, number one is you want to use an operating system that comes free with your new computer hardware. That's one reason not to use Linux. And by the way, Addison continues on with his list. He just added a number five, which is you won't use an OS you can't pronounce. So,
okay. Yeah, and I responded to him. And what's so difficult about pronouncing Oneric Ocelot?
Oh, yes, exactly. There it is. All right.
Yes.
Exactly. All right. So, these are a little tongue-in-cheek of the actual reasons, but the point is we're making a point is that the point being what? You tell me.
The point being Linux is Linux has advantages in many, many areas, and I'm just trying to poke a little fun at Windows as we tongue-in-cheek say, here's why you might not want to use Linux.
Because none of these reasons are really going to be happening to you. I mean, they're all, you know. The bottom line, there is no good reason why you shouldn't be using Linux, okay?
That's so, it, exactly.
You know, we're having a little fun with it. And at the same time, talking about it, and of course, phone lines 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. A chat room is filling up. We like to see that. Give us a call if you have any questions about it, or if you even know what Linux is, or you have questions about it. This is the place to get those questions answered. Of course, for the uninitiated, Linux is an alternative operating system. It's an alternative to Windows. It's an alternative to the Mac OS, which are the two biggest consumer computer operating systems, Mac or Windows 7 currently, although Windows 8 is around the corner. Linux is the third operating system, but it's free, it's open, and it's available, and it is very graphic. It has a terrific graphical user interface. It's very friendly. It doesn't require a lot of horsepower on the computer to run it. You don't need to have some state-of-the-art computer to run Linux. It'll work on a very small, minimal system and still do a terrific job. There are really no downsides to Linux, and that's the whole true thing about it, is that it's easy to use, it's fun to use, and something we certainly want you to be aware of if you're not. And so many millions of people out there now are using Linux and are very happy using Linux. If not as their only operating system, certainly as an alternative operating system that they can boot into when they want to do so.
And well. Craig, one other thing that's a really big advantage that we tend to not focus on too much on this show, but it's really, really important, and that is the license agreement. Unlike the EULA or the end user license agreement for Windows, which restricts the number of computers you can install it on and mm-hmm. restricts the you from making copies for any particular reason, Linux actually encourages you to copy and redistribute the operating system to anyone you see fit to give it to. And that's one of the big advantages. You have a large number of freedoms, rather, in addition to being free from having to pay for it, you have the freedom to copy it, to modify it if you're a programmer, to inspect the source code, and to use it in any way you see fit and redistribute it to anyone else as well.
Now, Ben, I understand you just made a partition on your hard drive, and very proud that you did that.
I am indeed.
Yes, and the purpose of making the partition is you want to install Linux on this partition?
I need somewhere to save all my porn. But for the purpose of the show, yes, it was for Linux. I'm planning on getting Mint, and I didn't know how big to make it, so I went with 500 megabytes and hoping that's enough.
Well, yeah,
no, that's plenty.
That's plenty. Yeah, 500 megabyte partition for Linux, and now he can get Linux Mint for free. It's just a download. Any words of wisdom to Ben before he actually installs this on his computer?
Words of wisdom. Follow the instructions.
The Yellow Brick Road.
It's really, really easy. If okay. you've got a live CD, you just boot to it, and it will guide you along. It will ask you a few questions, and it's not impossible to make a mistake. But if you answer the questions the way it makes sense to do it, you'll be fine.
Now, why did you pick Mint? Why are you going with Mint and not Ubuntu, Ben? Why did you choose that particular installation
and
the distribution?
I don't know. It just I was looking at how much cleaner it was than Ubuntu, and it just I don't know. If you held me down and said which one or why this one, I would say because I like Mint better than Ubuntu.
Well, just the way it looks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And a lot of folks would agree with you. A lot of folks would disagree with you, but by the same token, I'm one of those that agrees with you that Linux Mint has a lot going for it, including the way it looks. It's just very attractive, and it looks very familiar to someone who is moving over from Windows because it has a lot of Windows-esque features, but it also has a lot of Mac-ish features to it as well, especially if you look in the panel at the bottom, what Windows would call a system tray. You'll see your wireless icon and your speaker icon and various other things over there by the clock. They are almost identical to the way they look on a Mac, and it's specifically designed to make you feel comfortable no matter what operating system you're switching from, as long as you switch.
Okay, so Linux Mint it is, and
would there be any benefit if I have Mint, should I create another 500 megabyte partition to get Ubuntu? Does one do something better than the other?
Linux Mint is based on Ubuntu, so they're not going to do anything different from one another. They're both Linux. They're both based in the same code base. It's just Linux Mint has a number of utilities to make it a lot easier to use. So I'd start there.
I got a great idea. After you do this, Ben, next time Larry comes on, we should talk about installing Mint and how you've been using it for the month and just get some initial impressions
next month.
Yeah, I think that'll be a great idea. Hey, listen, we can take a break and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show, 6 Reasons Not to Use Linux. The topic for tonight, we'll be right back.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. It is our Linux show, and I'm just about to delve into my first Linux experience here, and I've already made one little mistake, but easily fixed.
What was the mistake you made? You created a partition that was too small.
500 megabytes. I thought that was enough. I heard Linux was lightweight.
Yeah. Yeah, lightweight, but not that slim. Okay.
So, but 50 gigabytes should do more than sufficient, right?
Yeah, I've installed it on a 20 gigabyte hard drive without any trouble. Not a lot of space left for data, but 500 megabytes, I thought you had said 500 gigabytes, so yeah. I apologize for that.
No, I'm megabytes, but it's easy enough to fix.
You can just delete the partition and start over and just make it.
Yeah, I guess so. It only takes a few seconds anyways. What would I be? Would there be anything that I take for granted in Windows that Linux kind of lacks?
Not operating properly.
I don't know what you use. So,
do they have everything like a media player, or do I have to go find that on my own? All that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, that gets us into the second reason why not to use Linux. So let me read that, and then I'll answer your question. So the second reason not to use Linux is if you want more than a few basic software applications, you'll go buy them yourself. And what I mean by that is on Windows, typically you get just a few basic applications, and that's it. And anything else, you have to go buy yourself. Mm-hmm. Whereas on Linux, most of the applications you need for data computing are already there, like a nice media player, like even beyond just a player for media, like Windows, what do they call her, basic media player there?
Windows.
Maybe it's media player, yeah. Exactly. It goes well beyond that. Most of the distributions of Linux actually come with an application for playing media that allows you to organize your media, much like iTunes does, except that it doesn't resort and reindex all your media into a way that iTunes wants it. It indexes it so that it can find it quickly, but it leaves it on your hard drive where you put it. Most of the media players that are available in the distributions of Linux also have subscriptions to free online, free legal online music and other things as well. So you'll find that the applications that come out of the box with most major Linux distributions, especially Linux Mint and Ubuntu and the more popular ones, it will come with a full Office suite for doing word processing and spreadsheets and presentations and database work, as well as your choice of browsers. It'll come with one, but you can download as many as you need or as many as you want. And media players, of course, lots of other applications. And what's not there installed out of the box, or if the choice that's there doesn't meet your needs, or you simply don't like the way it looks or the way it behaves, there are plenty more in the software center, or the software library. The repositories is the generic term for that. So you can download whatever you want and find an alternative if you don't like it, like what you have. And for the most part, for the vast majority of them, they're all no charge, so you can experiment around with as many as you want until you find the one you like, and then stick with that one.
It's sort of like the application store, the app store on the Mac, but most everything in there is free.
You say. Yes, that's a nice way to put it.
Yep, exactly. So there it is, and as I said...
But if I got Linux, then I would have to rely on something like... LibreOffice instead of Microsoft Word.
Right. And so it'll be a different product for the most part, a different software package. But LibreOffice or OpenOffice is the other one that comes on many Linux distributions. They work almost identically to the Microsoft product, not the ribbon interface that's on the more recent versions, but it works more like the traditional interface that you would find on any other application other than a Microsoft Office product. Mm-hmm. So with a file menu that gives you, you know, file, edit, tools, that sort of thing across the top. Traditional interface.
And all the documents that you created in Office will be completely readable and work with Libre or OpenOffice.
Yes, and vice versa. You can save documents you create in LibreOffice or OpenOffice in Microsoft format, and they will easily open any Microsoft format document, including the most recent formats, the DocX and the XLSX versions from the most recent Microsoft Office products.
There you go. All right, so that's reason number two. Let's go to reason number three.
Reason number three, not to use Linux. You don't want to verify that the software you are installing hasn't been altered unless it's an installer unless its installer is from the same vendor as your OS. That's a little awkward. But I found this out a couple of days ago, that when you are installing software from various sources on Windows, the operating system on Windows only verifies that the software that you have downloaded, assuming you've obtained it from some sort of download location, the only time it verifies that it hasn't been altered from its original version is when it's using the Microsoft installer program to do the installation. And there are many, many software applications out there for Windows that you use that don't use the Microsoft installer. The install file isn't a .msi file. That's the giveaway. And on Linux, if you install anything out of the repositories that are provided for your distribution, and if you install almost anything off the internet as well that might be in another repository, Windows doesn't verify it, but Linux does. So it will verify before installation that what it downloaded matches what it expects to see. And it uses some hashing and encryption, and I don't know all the details behind it to do that, just as Windows and Mac do, but it verifies everything, every application that you download. So you can be a lot more secure on your Linux system that you're not going to be infected because it checks the software, or that you're not going to break your system because you've downloaded a bad copy of something.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. The reason number four. Go ahead. Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, okay. I thought Ben had a comment. So number four is you want to – so these are, again, reasons not to use Linux.
Right.
You want to have to pay to upgrade your now incompatible applications after you just paid to upgrade your operating system.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, you moved to Windows 7, and now the old applications that you used to run don't work anymore, or you need an upgrade because, you know, they're not compatible, and so you have to go and pay for the upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
You don't run into that with Linux. Mm-hmm. Number five, you believe that an operating system needs to be reinstalled periodically. And an unrecoverable virus infection simply provides an opportunity to do that now.
Yeah, great.
And the number six, our final reason not to use Linux. And again, this is in honor of your newly acquired internet speed, Craig.
All right.
You aren't really using all of your capped bandwidth, so you'd like to make that extra bandwidth and processing power on your computer available for spammers to use.
Lovely.
Spammers being, I guess, Aaron living in the basement.
Not quite.
Okay. So that's our list of six reasons not to use Linux. And add to that the five that Addison came up with. And
yes.
We've got lots of reasons
why you really, really should be using it. There really is no reason for you not to be using Linux.
At least give it a try. You know.
Exactly.
What could possibly go wrong?
And exactly. And Ben's already experienced that, you know, for not taking a big enough hard drive partition. But you know.
Yeah.
But really, once you do it, you make a choice as to which distribution you want. And if you don't like the distribution for whatever reason, hey, you know, try a different one. I mean, they're all free. Mm-hmm. So you're not, you know, trying anything or burning any bridges with Linux.
Right.
You can always go back and always change it, and it won't cost you anything to do so.
That's right.
There it is. All right. Listen, now we're up against the break, and we'll continue on. Again, if you have any questions about Linux, the Linux operating system itself, this is the place to be. The third Tuesday of every month, we dedicate to the topic of Linux. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us into this hour. And also the next hour, where we'll start reading some of your emails. It's all about Linux tonight. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are in our third Tuesday of the month. We are talking to Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we are dealing with different topics tonight. Of course, the topic is why you should not use Linux. And that was really all tongue-in-cheek because there really are no reasons why you shouldn't be using it. It's free. It's easy to install. There are many, many different versions. The applications for the most part are free on Linux. Of some of the applications that might cost you something, because it's an open system, how do developers justify in Linux saying, you know, well, we're gonna charge you for it? How do they do that? Because most
there are some applications out there that are just so valuable that people are willing to pay some money for it, even on a free operating system. And there are a couple out there that I use for some of the programming stuff that I do use. I use a program called Balsamiq that is available for Windows and Linux, and I think Mac as well. Sure, it must be Mac as well because it runs on Adobe Air. Adobe Air, of course, is a development platform that Adobe makes available, and it makes it easy to build cross-platform applications. But this program allows you to do wireframes or mock-ups of the programs without having to actually do any coding behind it. And the program itself is $70, and there isn't anything out there that does what this program does. So I'm willing to pay for it. And in fact, I am willing to pay for some of the software that, and I have paid for some of the software that's out there for free, because I know that my dollars that I pay, actually, you can consider them a donation to the developer to help him or her continue, or them, if it's from a company, to continue to develop those programs. And you'll find that many Linux users will give back to the community in a number of different ways, not only financially by paying for programs, but also by providing support for other users, much like I do, as well as doing the programming, fixing the code, and doing a lot of other stuff that helps the community out, helps the developers out. And in fact, many companies pay their employees to develop the applications that their company uses and relies on their Linux servers or their Linux desktops if they use them. So IBM is a big contributor to that, as is Intel and Google as well. So lots of companies out there contributing to the development of Linux programs.
Okay.
And, you know, some of them will sell their software and some of them will give it away for free.
Let's go to John, who's Skyping in. He has a question for us. Computer America,
sure.
Craig Crossman. Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. What about yourself?
Okay, you hung up. I had to call you back.
I got Skype on my iPhone with the new OS 5, and it's not acting too good.
Well, you sound good now. You sound good now. Anyway, what can we do for you?
Okay, I had an old Mac Mini with the PowerPC, and I did load Linux on it, and I have it running. So now the question is, what's my next step? Since I don't want to use a whole monitor for that, is there a way I can remote in from either a Mac or a PC into that monitor, into the Linux,
PowerPC? Yeah, so you installed it with – did you install it remotely or did you have a
downloaded. I downloaded it. I have a keyboard and everything set up.
Okay, so you did install a keyboard and so on. Okay. Well, Linux has a remote program available for it. Most of the distributions use the same one, and they'll pre-install the client version that lets you remote into other computers, but there's also a server version available to it or available for it. And I'm just looking up the name of these two programs. One is called Remote Desktop. It's on Linux. And just look for Remote Desktop in the repositories. And that uses the VNC protocol, which means that any version of VNC, Chicken of the VNC for the Mac or Real VNC for Windows, will work just fine for remoting into your Linux computer. And from that, you'll be able to control it from the remote computer just as if you were sitting there with a monitor and keyboard in front of you.
Okay.
All right, John.
Okay, I'll try that.
Hey, give it a shot, and let's see how it works, okay?
Next month, the next question is, how do I turn it into a file server? But let me get this one going first.
All right, we'll save that for next month. Okay, John.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, bye-bye. All right, there you go. Now, we got another full hour of the Computer America show coming at you here. We're going to take a break, a top-of-the-hour break, and then we're going to continue on. And when we come back, we're going to read some of the emails that have been coming in from all over the country and that are Linux-related. Larry picks out some of them, so he feels these are the most interesting, and we're going to get to them in hour two. In the meantime, this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. If you want to give us a call, just like John did, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com, or of course, our Skype address, which is ComputerAmerica, all one word. We'll be right back after your local and your national news, and then stay tuned for another hour of Linux with Larry Bushy here on the Computer America Show.
You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
You know, I got a comment on that news story. $200,000 phone bill, a cell phone bill. And
we had one last night that was $68,000. I mean, one's a car, the other one's a house.
Oh my gosh! I mean, I that poor girl who got that bill, and it was for a brother who's deaf, who can't hear, and still.
And the only way for him to communicate is to, you know, text it out, send it over email. That's the only way.
If you were texting all day long, at $200,000 for a month, I mean, how much texting can you do? I mean, what are they charging for texting?
He was abroad, so I don't know, maybe there was like one tower
and they
charged premium rates.
He was in Canada, you know. I mean, that's not abroad, Canada. No.
Well, but still, the rates they charge for texting from Canada to other countries and vice versa is pretty steep.
And $200,000, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And when you think, if you text one letter, the letter O, in response to somebody, they're going to charge you a full minute's worth of text at an inflated amount per minute just to send that one letter. You know, it's
people should be
up really quick.
People wouldn't. You think people wouldn't be texting at all at those rates? And I love the last part of this, that they cut the bill. They cut it to $2,500. Oh my gosh, that's still a fortune. Yeah.
Well, when you look at the retail price of those text minutes compared with the cost, no wonder think of the markup. With the fact that they can actually cut it that much, and you know they're still making a profit.
Oh my gosh! I mean,
I would take that to court, and hopefully, you know, any judge with half a brain would throw out the entire thing.
Just say, you know, we didn't understand what we were doing, using, and they should just basically just toss the whole thing out, and then take the phone away from the kid, or just say you can't text anymore, you know, or find some alternative method. But
you know, Dixie cup with string, just anything.
Whatever. But you know, I mean, whatever it takes. But boy, anyway, we are in our Linux show here at Computer Markets, the third Tuesday of the month. Larry Bushy, the Going Linux podcast. He is the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast, and he continues on with us into hour two. It's all about Linux. If you have any questions about Linux, this is the place to be. It's 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255, live at computeramerica.com, the email address, our chat room at computeramerica.com, or our Skype address, which is Computer America, all one word. Our four different ways that you can reach us to ask your question. Larry, in this hour, we're going to read some of the emails that come in during the month and that you collect and kind of put together here. And let's do a little bit of that, okay?
That sounds great.
Okay, so what do we got? Bill is the first
one. Yeah, that's our first email. It's from Bill from Vermont, and he's a regular listener to the Going Linux podcast, and he's telling us that he's given his old computer some new speed. Bill writes, "Hi, guys. I heard of your switch to Mint 11, so of course I had to install VirtualBox on my Ubuntu 10.04 Dell Mini and then get Mint 11 running. A VirtualBox, by the way, is a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. I did this just to see if I could, and let's say it wasn't the fastest setup I've ever had. This is a netbook, after all. I almost bailed, but curiosity got the better of me. But so far, so good. I do like the Mint environment. Thanks for the inspiration. Bill, in Windham, Vermont." Mm-hmm. So that just goes to illustrate that under Linux, just as under Windows or under Mac, you can install virtual machine software like VMware or VirtualBox, and you can run another operating system inside it. And we were discussing on the chat room earlier, Ben, I know you like to game on Windows, and you would want to continue that, which is one of the reasons why you set a separate partition aside for Linux. But if your machine's fast enough and you have enough RAM, you could install Windows in a virtual machine on Linux, and it might run a little bit slower. But yeah, I know on a gaming machine you want every millisecond.
Yeah. I probably don't want to push the expression on this computer. My motherboard just died, you know, after a few months of having the computer, so probably the less I push it, the better it will be.
Only been a few months.
Yeah, something was wrong. Yeah, something was wrong.
Warranty issue here.
Yeah, they gave him a brand new motherboard. They said it was very extremely unusual, and they replaced the motherboard for him at no charge.
That's good.
You know, it was under warranty and everything, and he's back in operational with it. And then, of course, the other thing was that his headset was also malfunctioned. I don't think his headset ever worked properly in the first place. It was always
I think it did. No, I think you praise the clarity of my voice every day. since I had that headset.
Well, compared to a phone, yes. But in retrospect, when I would think of all the little hissing and strange artifacts that I would hear, albeit they were quiet, but they were still there.
Well, that was me, you know, chewing, drinking, sleeping, eating on the air.
No, you're still
that's completely separate.
No, you're still doing that, and I don't hear any of it now. So I switched them out to a Logitech headset, and now it sounds perfect. So. I don't think the computer's at fault there. The headsets are definitely – they have a problem. He has to return them. But, you know, other than that, things have been going great.
No, the motherboard and the headset next? Okay.
Exactly. Well, now he's going to put Linux on, you know. I mean, what else can go wrong?
I'm actually right in the middle of installing it. Right in the middle of downloading it, which is 900 megabytes.
All right. Well, keep on going. You should have gone with the BitTorrent, I think, version, and would have taken a little less time. But hey, it's a DVD's worth. Okay, our next email is
Aldo.
From Aldo. Yes,
is it Aldo or Aldo?
Aldo, you know, tomato, tomato. He has a suggestion and a complaint.
Okay.
He says, "Hi, Larry and Tom," and just. Since we haven't mentioned it, Tom is my co-host on
the Linux
podcast.
You have
one
of those?
I do. I do.
All right.
And he runs Linux as well, of course. I have read that Ubuntu now comes with a backup tool called Deja Dup or Deja Dup. It's D-U-P is the way it's spelled.
Deja Dup, because it's not Deja Vu, so Deja Dup.
Deja Dup, pre-installed. It seems easy to use, but I know there are other alternatives such as Back in Time or S Backup. It would be good to have an episode to cover some backup solutions. Thank you for your awesome podcast. Actually, I have a complaint as well.
Yeah, a little smiley face.
Yeah, a little smiley face. You both don't like the new Unity interface in Ubuntu, which I respect, but disagree. I think it's awesome. And based on that, you started recommending Linux Mint over Ubuntu. No one is forced to use Unity. Users can have the old GNOME interface by choosing Ubuntu Classic during login. The situation in 11.10, that's the next version of Ubuntu,
right.
Ubuntu, will be similar, I think. There will be an option to have Classic GNOME, and what are the other advantages of Mint? Codecs. It's easy to install Ubuntu restricted extras and be just like Linux Mint, except the Mint applications. Maybe users will lose the integration with Ubuntu One and its services, such as paid applications and Music Store. But one thing I know for sure, the quality of translations, at least for Brazilian Portuguese, is not the same. The applications exclusive to Mint are not translated most of the time. I think Linux Mint is a great distro as well, but its advantages are not worth to recommend it over Ubuntu. Thanks again, Aldo.
You agree?
And, I agree to some degree, but I do disagree with him in other areas. So let me elaborate a little bit. The translations, he's absolutely correct. Linux Mint's translations are not as complete as the translations you would get on Ubuntu. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Mint is based on Ubuntu, so the translations for the basic Linux are there. It's just the special utilities that the Linux Mint folks provide are not as well translated.
All right. Well, Aldo, thank you for the email, and I hope you continue using your Linux distribution. We're going to take a break, and then we'll continue on. More Linux here on Computer America. We are talking about It's All Linux. Everything having to do tonight is the topic of Linux. It's our Linux show. It's the third Tuesday of every month. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And right for this hour, we're kind of dedicating to your emails. But our phone lines remain open, 866-606-TALK, if you want to get in touch with us. Skype address Computer America. So here's something from Leo, who was evidently a neuroscientist from the University of Toronto.
Right.
After all those bad things we said about Canada.
Well, we said most of them in the chat room, so unless you were in there, you didn't hear them, so that's okay. But
just
before
kidding.
We actually, before we go on to Leo's email, just to comment back on what Aldo had said Linux Mint, me recommending it over Ubuntu, and
yes.
primarily because of the Unity interface. A little bit of disagreement there. You know, Aldo thinks that Ubuntu is just fine, and it is. He makes the point that it's very easy to install the codecs, which are the bits of software that are needed to play things like MP3 files or some of the proprietary video formats or those kinds of things, whereas they just come pre-installed on Linux Mint. You do have to install them on Ubuntu. And in my opinion, that just makes it a little easier for someone unfamiliar with Linux to adopt Linux Mint. Like we were saying earlier with Ben, why would you choose for Ubuntu? Well, that's one of the reasons. And Aldo also made the point that if you don't like the Unity interface, which some people really love and some mm-hmm. people don't like so much, then you can always go back when you log in to a more classic look. That's not true on the latest release of Ubuntu. On the previous release, they had given you that option, but my understanding is on 11.10, the newest release, that option has been removed, and you are stuck with the Unity interface, or you are you're amazed with how wonderful the Unity interface is. And in Unity takes a classic operating system interface and turns it into something that would be perfect for a tablet. The buttons are nice and big. You can do a lot of things with keyboard shortcuts or just touching the screen if you have a touch screen or an on-screen keyboard. They've gone the same direction as the previews of Windows 8 are going. They're making it more like a phone interface or a touchscreen interface. And some people like that, some people don't. Mm-hmm. So all I'm right. one of the ones who don't.
All right.
And obviously Aldo's one of the ones who does.
So you're sticking, you're sticking to your conviction about the
interface. I am.
Sorry, Aldo.
And, yeah, that's okay. To each his own, own opinion. And mm-hmm. That's why there's so much choice in Linux land, is so that, you know, if you don't find one that meets your needs, try again. Mm-hmm. It's out there. There's no risk. So let's go on to Leo's email. He is a neuroscientist, or at least he says he is. I have no reason to doubt that he is. He emailed us from the University of Toronto with a comment and a question. Hello, Larry and Tom. I have been using Linux now for over 3 weeks. Yes, I am a recent convert. This was not the first time I tried installing Linux, but my first attempt was about 10 years ago with a Red Hat distribution that left me very frustrated and with a partition I couldn't use on my hard drive. Well, after fooling around with Backtrack 4R2 distro on a thumb drive for a couple of months, that's one I haven't even heard of, I realized that Linux was not the same beast I faced 10 years ago. I ended up doing some reading and decided to give Ubuntu a go. My choice of distro was mostly based on the fact that Ubuntu was probably the most supported distro at the moment. It definitely is. I'm absolutely loving it, and I'm learning so much. The Linux community is simply incredible, with millions of websites with information, many podcasts, and a strong IRC community. Your podcast was one of the very first I subscribed for Linux, and it was extremely helpful for getting me started. Yeah. I have now listened to at least 20 episodes, one thing I had trouble initially and found that going Linux didn't go into, at least from what I've heard so far, is the reason behind partitioning my hard drive into three separate partitions before installing Ubuntu. Uh-huh. I'm using a swap partition, a home partition, and a root partition without having a clear explanation as to why and how this is useful. This is important since I never really know how much space to allocate to each one.
What?
Sound familiar, Ben?
Not bad.
That sounds very familiar.
Yes. Anyway, let me get back to what I really wanted to ask you guys. I'm a neuroscientist, and one of the most important pieces of software for my work is a strong statistics software. I use Statistica on Windows, but there are many other options as well. I was wondering if there is a Linux open source option for me. The applications I use on Windows are very expensive, $1,000 to $2,000.
Yeah.
And
it's like Mathematica. Mathematica is also, I think it's the same company or similar company.
Right. Yeah. And having a free program to do that would definitely give me an excuse to put Linux on some of my work machines. Is, you know, once you get started with Linux, it just inserts itself everywhere. Yeah. Is there anything you guys can recommend? Again, thanks for the wonderful show. Resources like your podcast and website help a lot if new converts to be able to switch to Linux. Sincerely, Leo. Well, thank you, Leo, for the kind words. And let me answer your question first about a statistics package for Linux. I don't know if it's in the same category as Statistica. But there is a program called R.
R?
Yeah, just the letter R, capital R. That's a statistics program.
How do you spell that?
Thanks.
I'll tell you what. We got to take a break, and then we'll get back to R and help Leo out with this question. This is Computer America. We'll be right back. Stay with us. It's all Linux tonight. Don't go anywhere.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. We have Larry Bushy joining us for both hours. And right before the break, he just started to answer a question about the any free programs that this gentleman would use. And apparently, installing Linux is not rocket science, but rocket scientists could use Linux.
I mean, and it's called R, and in the chat room during the break, I was wondering why would, if you had to choose one letter and there was a program on statistics, why call it R? You should call it S. But I guess, maybe S was already taken, but
maybe
you
so.
Could call it S1 then or something. I don't know. Where does R come from, you know?
I don't know.
Maybe
talk
it's,
like a pirate.
It's,
day.
It's popular for pirates, exactly. All right. Okay. So
it's not pirated software,
though. No. Okay.
Yeah. Just to complete the answer to that, there's also a Wikipedia article. We'll include a link in the show notes, I'm sure, to a comparison of statistical packages, not just for Linux, but across the board for all operating systems. And there are several included in there. And I believe Statistica actually has an online version you can run from your browser, of course, that will run from a Linux browser just as well. So if that does what you need it to do, you might want to try that, especially if it's not going to cost you another $1,000 to $2,000 to use the online version. But Leo had also been talking a little bit about Backtrack 4R2 distribution, mm-hmm. and the Linux community, and the fact that we didn't go into the partitions and why partitions are important. So let me discuss that for a little bit as well, because Ben's doing the installation, and when you're done, Ben, that one partition that you've created will actually be repartitioned a little bit further into a home and a root partition and a swap partition. And what are all those and why do I need them? Well, the swap partition, you think of that like your Windows swap file, or it's not called a swap file, it's called something else, but it's a file where the operating system writes temporary information from RAM when it runs out of RAM, and it stores it on the hard drive in this special file on Windows. Temp. Well, sorry?
Temp file? Like
no,
temporary?
It's not temp. It's actually... I wish I could remember the name of it. Mm-hmm. The file that
but it's a temporary
that Windows
file.
Uses. Yeah, it's a it's when you're running out of RAM, they actually take some of the stuff that they would put into RAM and they put it onto the hard drive right. temporarily. Yeah. And you, generally speaking, it's files or portions of files or whatever that you're not using. Mm-hmm. Very quickly, so that frees up the more frequently used stuff that's in RAM, because the hard drive is actually a slower
not
place
slower,
to
sure.
store stuff. So what they do in Linux, though, is they actually create a separate partition for that. And what that allows Linux to do differently from Windows is it allows you to have a defined set of space that is known up front, whereas Windows has a file that's mixed in with everything else on your hard drive, and that file may expand and contract, or you would like it to contract, but it doesn't. It continually takes up more and more space because it never does shrink unless you delete the file, which you don't want to do while you're running Windows or things could break. So that's the swap partition. It's just to help your computer use RAM more efficiently. And why would you want to separate the root partition and the home partition, and what are those things? Well, think of home as your My Documents folder in Windows, except that in home, everything that you save to your hard drive that you have created yourself should go in there, including the preferences and your setup options for the programs you've installed. And so, unlike Windows, Linux puts those preferences not in the same folder as the program itself or the application itself, but it puts it in your home partition. I'll describe why in a second. But the root partition is where the operating system is installed and the programs are installed. There's a whole file system under the root directory where it stores the programs you need to run Linux and to run your applications. So that's have the two. And how much space should you allocate to each one? Well, I would recommend, especially when you first start out, let Linux choose the size of those partitions for you. And it will do that automatically unless you tell it you want to manually partition. So let it set them up automatically. You want enough space in the root directory to hold all of the programs that it's going to install, and then a little bit more for any other things you want to add later on. And the home is as large as you can have it, because that's where you're going to store your music and your photos and your word processor documents and anything else that you're creating. So that's what the home directory is. And it also stores the preferences. Now, one advantage of having a partition for home, a separate partition for home, is that if you decide to reinstall your operating system or even change distributions mm-hmm. with another Linux distribution, all you have to do is back up that home directory, and you're backing up not only your data, but also your settings and your preferences for your applications. So think about it this way. You decide to switch from Linux Mint, and you decide to give Ubuntu a try. Well, you can back up your home directory to another hard drive somewhere,
right,
and then completely wipe out the partition you installed Linux Mint on, if you wish, and install Ubuntu. Now, take your backup home directory and put it in the home directory that Ubuntu has created for you. Now, you've got all your data back, and when you power up Thunderbird, your mail client, or Firefox, your browser, all of your shortcuts are there, your bookmarks, all of your mail is there, all of your settings, your preferences are all there because they're in your home directory.
So what you're saying here is if you do it this way, you can change the distribution of Linux and everything will remain constant to that new distribution. It'll be able to find everything. It'll be able to use it if you maintain a separate home and separate root directory.
That's exactly right. Okay. So unlike Windows, where you would have to go chasing around through the Thunderbird folder to find your mail preferences through the...
Well, that's really nice.
It's really, really good.
And Ben, so if you don't like Mint, for example, if you create a home directory and a root directory, then you can try a different... a myriad of Linux distributions and not have to worry about it finding anything and everything. Everything will be there.
And Mint will provide those for you. You don't even have to consciously set them up. They'll be there.
By the way, KY Engineer says that R is the correlation coefficient. It's a statistical variable, and they named the program after this correlation coefficient, R.
Good for him. You can tell he's an...
Thanks, KY Engineer, for that little tidbit. Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, all right, well, now the mystery is solved. So there it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And S is probably something else that you don't want.
It probably means, lunch or something. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
I like the idea that you can put it, if you keep your everything in the home and root directories, that the distribution of Linux doesn't really care. It doesn't care which distribution of Linux that you're using. You'll be able to replace it, and then it will know everything where everything is supposed to be. You don't have to worry about setting everything up all over again. You just put the new distro on, and then all your data and everything is there for it to find.
And many Linux users, even though with a different music program or a different browser or whatever, mm-hmm. will replace that with the one they like best. And so they typically, even though they're using a different distribution, they'll replace the applications with the ones they like and the ones they always use. And by having all those preferences in your home directory, it's really easy. Once you've reinstalled it, everything just works.
Very, very nice. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So do we have time for Jenny's long email, do you think, or should we go to the shorter one from David?
No, let's go with Jenny when we come. Start it, and then when we come to the break, we'll just continue on from that point, okay?
All right. That's a deal.
All right.
So Jenny noticed my recent preoccupation with price on various Going Linux episodes. Jenny writes, "Hello, guys. I've been listening to the show for a few years now, and I'm a fan. I've directed..." Well, we didn't get halfway through it before the music started.
Yeah,
you got
exactly.
The first sentence almost done.
Yeah, I can finish the sentence. "I've directed Linux newbies to it a few times to help them get started." Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, we'll continue on with Jenny's lengthy email when we come back. Again, it's All Linux Show. We're here to help you, too. 866-606-TALK. If you have a question about Linux, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the computer.
We have a big problem here.
What is that?
Larry, do you know what Tux, the Linux penguin, do you know what he looks like?
Yes.
Okay. Craig says he cannot tell one penguin from another. And I mentioned to him that, Tux is pretty easy to recognize.
Right.
He looks like the
Craig, and Craig's like, "You mean the one from Happy Feet? You mean the one from the Discovery Channel? You mean, any random penguin?" Tux is recognizable.
Yes, he is. He's kind of pear-shaped, not in the English sense of the word, which means, it's going down the tubes. But he's shaped like a pear to some degree, and he has a specific... I think he's even trademarked the design of Tux the penguin.
Ben is accusing me of saying that all penguins look alike, and he's calling me a racist. So I don't.
Yes, against penguins, I am.
But they are black and white. So
there you go. Okay.
All right.
So
where were we?
Well, Jenny, notice
Jenny. Right. Yes. So Jenny continues with her email. "I myself have been on Linux for a few years and have started on Fedora 8 and can currently and currently using mainly Slackware 13.1 and have one Fedora 16 beta partition. I tried Ubuntu and Mint because you two keep mentioning them, but to be honest, I really don't like them. I'll take Slackware or Fedora over either any day, but to each their own. I have a couple of comments. My only real big grievance with the show is that when speaking on the topic of why people should use Linux, you tend to focus on the cost or lack thereof. However, many of us Linux users choose to pay for the software we have available to us for free. I, for example, buy install CDs from the Slackware store, even though I am more than capable of downloading and burning the disk myself. This is because I want to support the Slackware project. I use Linux because it gives me freedom and control over my machines, not because it costs nothing. Others use 100% free, as in Freedom Software, GNU Linux systems, because they value their freedom highly. I personally very much prefer free software, but if I have no suitable alternative, I will use proprietary stuff until I can replace it with a free and open source software equivalent. Some just want the stability that Linux has. Don't get me wrong, some people use Linux because it's free, and there's nothing wrong with that. I am not saying that using Linux for that reason is any better or worse than any other reason. But for the sake of users who aren't looking to switch to avoid paying money, I believe it would be worth mentioning other reasons people use it when the topic comes up. I know you haven't completely ignored these other reasons, but for a listener who isn't going through the entire archive, they might not be aware of the other reasons to go Linux. I would greatly appreciate it if you, from time to time, when commenting on why to go Linux, would just add one or two more sentences to address the fact that there are other reasons than just not paying money. With that said, I would like also to encourage any listeners to support their preferred Linux distributions and free and open source software projects, especially if you are getting them for free. Support for users is a huge concern for many projects like this. I don't mean just by sending money, but filling out bug reports when things go wrong. If you're a coder, by helping with code and patches, maybe just something as small as telling your friends about the project to increase traffic to their web page. The value of user support cannot be overstated when it comes to many projects and services available from the free and open source software communities. Keep up the good work, guys. Just a couple of things I thought would be worth bringing up. Happy hacking, Jenny.
Well, I think she makes some valid points. You know?
She really does. Yeah. And I've made an effort to mention other reasons for using Linux and even this episode on why not to use Linux.
Exactly. And And let us not forget, it's also free.
Exactly.
Right. Hey, listen, Larry, in the remaining minute, tell us about the Going Linux podcast and what's coming up next and where people can listen to it.
All right. You can find us on our website at goinglinux.com. And our next episode is What's Wrong with Linux?
All right.
Keeping with the theme. So stay tuned for that. You can reach us at goinglinux@gmail.com if you want to email us, or find us on Twitter or Identica as Going Linux. And we'd be happy to answer your questions and help you out and provide our support back to the Linux community in our small way.
Exactly. Well, of course, the next Linux show will be the 15th of November when you'll return. And listen, Larry, always a pleasure having you here on the show. Thank you so much for being with us here tonight on our Linux show. And best of luck to you on the Going Linux podcast, and tune it in. And you can, you know, again, on our links page at computeramerica.com, you can see the link to it, and you can see Tux, there's a little penguin there, Ben, in case you didn't know.
There you go.
And you can click on him as well. Hey, listen, Larry, thank you so much for being with us here tonight.
Thanks, and good night.
All right, take care. Have a good evening. Good night.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.